Now that the game is done, it's our time to check in.
Lopez casts up the three and he rattles it home. We are tied.
Butts Talk starts now.
33 seconds to go. Cody White pulls up and answers from 17. 2-point lead for the Bulls.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studio, here's Justin Garcia and Brandon Snide.
Well, it's the, I suppose, good and bad of playing a team so many times in such a short span. Like, you just knew, and I know there's no way to quantify this, Brandon, and these are the things that I push back against the most, typically coming from you. But you just knew the Bulls were not going to lose, or at least look as bad as they did Monday. Two games in a row to an undermanned Bucks team, especially if there was no Dame and Giannis tonight, but still no Giannis. There was going to be added motivation from the Bulls, not only because of losing to a Bucks team without Dame and without Giannis on Monday, but the disaster they had Thursday against the Atlanta Hawks when they gave up 50 points in the fourth quarter. This was certainly going to be a focused Bulls team. And I think that's largely what we saw. Doc Rivers shared his thoughts after the game about what he thought he saw from his group. And you read between the lines, Doc was surprised that it was even close for large portions of this because of the way that the Bulls attacked the Bucks. But this one just had a weird feel going into it where you were like, good news that Damian Lillard is back, but kind of feels like you need both of these guys after what you did to them last week, or earlier this week, I should say.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I'll add one to it, Justin, where they gave up the Bulls gave up a 17-point lead against the Atlanta Hawks just a few days ago. So,
I mean, 50 points in the fourth quarter.
Correct, yeah. So you kind of knew that you were going to probably get the Bulls' best shot. I was a little bit surprised to see that they're as bad as they are at home. So, yeah, looking into the game, looking before the game, you saw that Damian Lillard was going to return. He told Eric Name of The Athletic it was the sickest he's ever been. So you weren't sure exactly what you were going to get, but holy cow, 29 points tonight. Just under 50% shooting. If that's the game he's coming off of being the sickest he's ever been, you know, that's a positive to look at. It's an annoying loss because you are better than the Bulls, I think, even without Giannis. Now, most teams, if they don't have their best player, are probably going to be at a disadvantage more times than not. I think that kind of goes without saying. The Bucks still without Giannis. Damian Lillard not fully healthy, kind of getting his legs and his wind back. But it's a game where it started off, I tweeted it out too. The Bucks look almost disinterested, Justin. I know that might not be the case, but it seemed like they were a little bit late on rotations. They weren't moving the ball around, and things were kind of getting away from them early on. And I agree with Doc Rivers when he talked about it felt like it could have got away from them if they don't get a couple Chris Middleton runs in there in that second quarter going into halftime. But I mean, look, you and I talked about this, like, as great as it's been over the last month plus, you're going to have these stretches where you lose games where we think they shouldn't lose. This is, to me, this is one of them. I thought they were better, especially, you know, in that second half, but obviously not late in the game. But you lose to Brooklyn where you had a double-digit lead. You lose to the Bulls. You never really had a double-digit lead, but it felt like in moments in that third and fourth quarter that you had a chance to kind of pull away. So it's a frustrating loss. You know, it's a loss that I'm not necessarily upset about because I think, you know, they're going to happen. It's just like this part of the schedule. I mean, we had talked about it, you know, about a week or two ago that, you know, when you got Brooklyn and you got Chicago a few times, you got Indiana coming up, you want to get, you know, more wins than losses. And hopefully, you know, they can round that out on Tuesday against Indiana, but not necessarily terribly upset tonight, but it more annoyed, I suppose, is probably the best term for tonight's outcome.
855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. We got one more show during the calendar year on, I believe we do, at least.
Correct, yeah.
Do we? Okay.
I hope we do, because it's on the schedule, so.
I was going to say.
We'll find out.
So that'll be 5 o'clock. Basically, mm-hmm. or sometime around there. It's a 2 o'clock tip on New Year's Eve. So It's going to be an afternoon edition of Bucks Talk, but we still got tonight to get through. Can't help but notice you didn't hand out any game balls, Brandon.
No, Justin, I'm a sore loser, so we only do that on wins. But if I had to give one out tonight, you got to give Damian Lillard a lot of credit for what he did. I know Doc Rivers took a little bit of blame, you know, for that outcome, you know, late in the game, not getting Damian Lillard the ball in his hands. But 29 points. Here's something you can explain to me, because I need someone of your expertise to explain this to me. What is the deal, now that we're talking about Damian Lillard, and not getting the shooting fouls that I feel like he's gotten and that the league has given out in years past? And this year for him, it seemed, I mean, you could tell he's frustrated with not getting those continuation calls. And I don't understand. I watch, you know, if I watch a game, I see it 3-4 times every time I'm watching any other game. And then I think he got one tonight, but it felt like he had like 4 or 5 that were left there on the court. And again, I don't know if that's a league had changed, you know, how they're going to, you know, officiate those. But I don't know. It feels like he's just not getting that continuation call as often as, number one, as he used to, and as, you know, number two, is what I'm seeing outside of just watching the Bucks.
It's been half and half. Like, half of them feel like he's starting to gather in the act of a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them, and Doc has even said this too, some of them, you can't chase the foul. And I think that's what we're seeing now. He's at least getting the whistle now that it's a team foul, which, when you got Dame on your team, is important, especially in the fourth quarter, to get teams into the penalty and get Damian Lillard to the free throw line. But, I mean, the biggest thing is that play has not been removed from basketball. It's been minimized. That it's one of the things starting last year in, not necessarily around this time, but what, January, they really went in and tried to remove a lot of the offense, because it was getting to be a little too much offense, where the discourse was like, man, nobody's playing defense and there's too many threes. And, you know, the Celtics, the all-time great offense ever. The Pacers the year prior had that. The Mavs the year prior had that. That year after year after year, we had the number one offense in the history of basketball. And I think the league was mindful of that. And let's try to level the playing field here. So that changed late in January last year. But the other thing that Doc Rivers pointed out, and why he said he has told Damian Lillard, you can't just hunt for these fouls. You're on the video. And Doc said this early last year, too. He's mentioned it a couple of times this year. You're on the video. And the first time he mentioned it, there was, I don't recall who it was, but there was somebody in the room who didn't know what he was referring to. And Doc saw that look on their face and was like, oh, do you know what I mean? The league sends out a video before the season starts where they go through their points of emphasis and here's what we're really looking at for officiating. And on that video, it's, these things are what we're going to be watching for. These things are some rule changes and what we're not going to be calling. And with those types of plays, Damian Lillard was the player that was used on the video to show we're not giving this. Like, I'm sure James Harden was on there and a few others, but more of those clips, most of them were Damian Lillard. So Doc's message has been, you're on the video. You're not going to consistently get that call. I'm not saying don't try for it, and I'm not saying that all of these are grifts and foul baits, but just be aware you're probably not going to get that continuation in that call. So once it happens once, you got to move on to something else.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose, and I get it, and that's fine, you know, as long as it's but for me, it's consistency.
Well, and I'll say tonight, I don't remember the game, but there was one earlier this year where it did feel like, all right, we're grifting for this foul now. Tonight, that was not, at least how it came across to me. Like tonight,
I guess, and I'm not blaming the refs.
Yeah, and at the very least, again, he's drawing fouls, that you're racking up those team fouls. True. He got to the free throw line 10 times tonight. Yep. So it didn't feel like, all right, let's just, we got nothing else working offensively, so I'm just going to try to bait this foul here.
Yeah, no, and that, and I get it, and I, you know, I know the job for the officials too, and I can sometimes be a harsh critic of theirs is extremely tough in the NBA. It's, you know, quick, fast moving, a lot of things going on. So I don't want to. It's not a ref's fault that the Bucks lost tonight, obviously, but you know, look, I can't help but still feel the same way, Justin, that I felt about this team, even, you know, after they won the NBA Cup and a few games after where they bounced back after that Cleveland loss. I still feel good about this team. I think the part for me, though, is like, and I know it's an illness and you know, it just, it's like, man, we take a step forward and then we take two steps back. You know, with these injuries, I mean, we can just
I mean, it's at least been 14 steps forward and six back. So I mean, this it's still two for one at this point.
The tenth different starting lineup for Doc Rivers this year. I mean, the most in the NBA. I mean, it, you know, to be 16-14, and I know that I just rattled off and said, man, this is a frustrating loss, or it's more of an annoying loss than anything, because, you know, you had the shot look that you wanted with Chris Middleton late in that game. Brooke Lopez, 22 points, and I thought he was really good. You know, Damian Lillard, you know, made his way back. He almost had the flu game in Chicago tonight. But, you know, with all that being said, I mean, all these different injuries, all these different lineups, I think if you would have told me at the beginning of the year all these things that would have happened, I think I'd be okay with where we're at right now. I would be content with where we're at. And, yeah, you can be frustrated after you drop a game to Brooklyn that, you know, you probably should have won, but you didn't have your top two players. And, you know, I don't want to make an excuse for them, but I feel like most teams are going to probably lose games, you know, if they don't have their two top players and your third best player is still coming back from, you know, double ankle surgery. And, you know, to be 16-14 and two games over 500 and you're still right where you kind of want to be. I think I'll tell you this. When Chris Middleton went down with that, what was ruled a flagrant foul after a review, and he was slamming his fist on the floor. And when he got up, I was like, to be honest with you, Justin, I was like, I'm okay with whatever happens tonight as long as he's okay. And he went to the bench and he came back in. And he played, and he missed a shot at the end of the game to tie the game, but he missed the shot. He was able to miss the shot. He came back and played after what looked like it could have been a scary moment for Bucks fans. Like, that's the things I think we kind of need to just kind of wrap our head around is, like, let's just get to the dance healthy. Like, yes, these are annoying and frustrating. There's going to be more that happen, but, man, I really want a fair shot in the playoffs this year. And I know it's December and we're not even close to being there yet, but tonight right there with that Chris Middleton fall, it scared me. And I was content with whatever happened tonight as long as he was okay. Thankfully he was.
And to that point, you get 2 days off between now and an afternoon game, but between now and the game in Indianapolis, because I would assume the ankle's probably not going to feel great tomorrow. If you're Chris Middleton, 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. I do at one point want to get to some of the numbers that we've seen on an individual basis since Chris Middleton returned, because a lot of our discussion has been centered around how much Chris is going to help evolve the offense. That has not been the case for at least one player, so I do want to take a look at some of those numbers coming up after this on Bucks Talk.
Welcome back to Bucks Talk.
So Bucks basketball moving right to left now, inside of 35 seconds to go in the third. Rollins cranks up a three and splashes it through. Michelob Ultra three for Rollins.
Ryan Rollins, very good tonight. Just 7 points scored, but it was very interesting to see some of those closing minutes or late minutes from Ryan Rollins. I do want to revisit part of what Doc Rivers said before the game as it pertains to players like Ryan Rollins, Andre Jackson Jr., A.J. Green, Gary Trent Jr., and the way that he has cobbled together these rotations. But we're 30 games into the season now, and Doc Rivers said after the game tonight, look, I'm not the type to look backward and get into the could've, would've, should'ves. We could have easily been 18-12 and won these two games, especially that Nets game. I mean, both of these were there for the taking, but this team could easily have been 18-12, but we're not. We're 16-14, it doesn't eliminate, and this has been the constant message from Doc, two straight losses doesn't take away what we've done since that start. And I know internally, too, I talked about this a little bit on Thursday, there is this, not like, hey, I'm sick of hearing this and we don't want to discuss this anymore, but there is this internally with the team, this sense of let's just move on from 2-8. I get it's a talking point. I get nationally too. People can say, hey, look at the Bucks after a 2-8 start. This is what they're doing. But we're not focused on that. We're focused on the 14-4 and now 14-6 since then and what we've done in those now 20 games. Not so much the comparisons to here's what we weren't doing and here's what the record was, here's what we're doing now. And I think that's kind of what we've picked up from Doc Rivers too with the I don't look backwards and we could easily be 18-12. We're not. So how do we win Tuesday in Indianapolis? But to me, the big thing is, and this is where I even struggle, it's not like a panic and we really got to dig into this, but we're still waiting to see the offense reach the heights that, frankly, it needs to be at. Like, what we've seen from the defense, we've had that discussion quite a bit. I do think it is real. It is not fool's gold, and it has started to carry over. But the offense has not. And where I really struggle with trying to say, well, what's not working and what's the issue and what needs to change is, I mean, let's just look at the month of December alone. You had four straight games where Dame didn't play. You've now had four straight games where Giannis didn't play. Chris Middleton didn't come back until December 9th. So you still haven't gotten the mix of those three guys together. And how many times throughout training camp did we hear Doc Rivers say, we're still not really installing everything yet because Chris isn't there and we're waiting for that. And you know, these guys were kind of just playing like pickup ball, basically, is the way it was playing, of figure it out. And we have ideas and concepts of how we want to play. We certainly practice and go through things in that sense, but the full sail sets that we're going to run, that's not fully there yet. And as Doc would point out, look, everybody runs variations of the same thing anyway, but we're just waiting for Chris Middleton to come back to really install all of this stuff. He's back. But you have not had that consistent runway of Chris, Giannis, and Damian Lillard. So it is, in a sense, like, well, there's this. So I'm willing to give them time with the offense and say I trust with that trio and the rest of the pieces that they brought in. It is going to at least be knocking on the door of a top 10. I mean, for this team to get out of the second round of the playoffs, I know you got to get out of the first round to do that, but for this team to reach the conference finals, the offense has to play like a better than top 10, but like that's the starting point. You got to be there. They haven't consistently been close to it yet. So I think that's where the pressure is going to be as we move into the new calendar year and especially in the second half of the year is please stay healthy so we can get extended looks with these three guys and the offense can really start to develop.
Yeah, I think that's all it is too, Justin. Like I think they have the capabilities are clearly there. I mean, you know, when you have Giannis and you have Dame and you have Chris Middleton, like I don't see a scenario outside of health where this team isn't, you know, nearing that top five and without a doubt in that top 10 offensively. Defensively, I think they're going to be stout. You know, wherever they finish, you know, is kind of depends obviously on who's been in and who's out, but they have the personnel to be a top 10 defense, as they are right now, especially out on the perimeter, which I think they've gotten a lot better at as the year has gone on. Once they figured out Andre Jackson Jr.'s role and Ryan Rollins' role, I thought AJ Green was, you know, he's a above average defender out there. So I think that will get better as the year goes on. But offensively, this team just doesn't have an excuse. I mean, outside of course, injuries to be in that top 10, top five range with what John Horst has put together in Giannis, Dame, and hopefully Chris Middleton going forward. I mean, and then you mix in guys like Gary Trent Jr., who's been really good for this team. Taurean Prince, I know he's kind of been struggling a little bit, I guess is a good word to use for him. You know, his role has obviously changed with, you know, Chris Middleton back into the swing of things. But I don't know if there's an excuse that we can, you know, sum together outside of, you know, these guys just aren't healthy, because, I mean, Damian Lillard and Giannis together, you should be in the conversation in the top five without a doubt.
I do want to take a look at what we've seen from a handful of individuals since Chris Middleton came back, because it has been an adjustment. And I think it was easy to look at how well those role players were starting to play and say, great, now you get Chris Middleton back, everything is only going to get better. But I think what we have seen, and what I was certainly leery of in the immediacy of that, was this is going to create some waves, and this can take some time to really settle back into what your roles are or what your new roles are for some of these players. So I want to take a look at some of those performances when we come back. Bucks lose to the Bulls tonight in Chicago, 116-111. More after this on Bucks Talk.
The Round Ball Repartee returns. This is Bucks Talk.
Lillard's the other way, a little stutter step, backs up, fires up on three, bullseye! Damian Lillard's on a 6-0 run, and the Bucks back to within one.
Big stretch in the fourth quarter from Damian Lillard, and it felt good for most of the early to mid portions of that fourth, but again, it was the final, I think, 5.5 minutes of this game where the Bulls outscored the Bucks 19-9, and again, this is another one of those areas where I don't want to nitpick too much because you didn't have 34 on the floor tonight, but it's another game where the Bucks just, I think it's too strong to say fell apart, but didn't execute in the fourth quarter. Thursday, you didn't have Giannis or Dame. Tonight, you didn't have Giannis. But this team, you know, during the midpoint, like when they were really picking up steam in that turnaround, they were really good in the clutch. And you had Giannis and Dame playing a majority of those games. You know, the Bulls, we didn't even touch on this yet, but the Bulls just controlled everything. With the pace that they play at, they're one of the, in the top, what, three, I think, in pace in the league this season. And Josh Giddey, as Doc said after the game, it wasn't even taking the threes and making the threes. Everything else about this game, Josh Giddey absolutely controlled with the pace that he played at, the ability to get into the paint. It was, in many ways, shades of the first matchup between these two teams. And the second game of the season for the Bucks, when the Bulls basically did the same thing and just played at a much faster tempo. They had paint touches that led to paint points in the paint and three-pointers. They hit much more threes, many more threes in that first matchup this season. But Doc said after the game, it felt like fool's gold because they were shooting at a much higher rate than us. That was coming off of twos and not off threes. They were playing at a faster pace. They were getting into the paint. They were just controlling everything. And not having Giannis is a big piece of that because it gives you that secondary guy to protect the rim. So many times, you can have rim protectors, but if you get into the paint and you collapse the defense and force them to react, you just have one little dump off to a big, and Brook Lopez has to contest the guard that's already there, which leaves the big wide open. So I think we saw a lot of that. I'm not going to say all of it is gone if Giannis is back, but it looks much different if Giannis is back. Now, the larger point that I wanted to get into, since Chris Middleton has come back, December 9th, his return against the Boston Celtics, the Bucks have played, 10 games, 9 games now, due to the official and unofficial games. But before Chris came back, there were two guys that were just shooting the lights out of the ball. Everybody was starting to pick it up. Brook Lopez shooting much better leading into that stretch. Gary Trent Jr. started to hit shots. But the two main cogs there, A.J. Green and Taurean Prince, they were both in the top five in three-point efficiency in the league moving into that date. Since Chris has come back, we have seen Damian Lillard already take 47 threes while playing in half as many games as all of his teammates. and he's taken the most threes on the team. So that's a very good sign. He's getting those looks. He's shooting 34% on his three since Chris Middleton returned. Gary Trent Jr., as we said, he really started to pick it up in, mid-November. He's shooting 42% since Chris Middleton returned at 19 of 45. Bobby Portis, one of the more important guys, especially in those games that Giannis has missed, is shooting 42% on threes. AJ Green dropped down to 38%. Brooke Lopez is shooting, your favorite player, Brandon, is shooting 43% on threes. Chris Middleton is shooting near 50% on threes. So you're seeing, hey, there's a lot of shooters on this team. And there's guys, you know, in the case of Chris, I don't know that he's going to be a 49% three-point shooter throughout the duration of the season. But Gary Trent Jr., when the Bucks signed him, you made the concession, look, Malik Beasley is a better shooter. But Gary Trent Jr., in theory, is going to get a lot of great looks. And if this offense is looking like what we envision it to be, when you got Dame, you got Giannis, you got what Chris looked like in that series against the Indiana Pacers, maybe he's not quite as good or an efficient shooter from three as Malik Beasley was, but why can't this guy shoot 40%? I think Beas was 42% last year. That's what we've seen since Chris Middleton returned. The one that stands out the most, though, Ryan Rollins, 44%, by the way.
Granted, that's my guy
a
right
small
there.
Sample. Yep. Small sample size there. What would your guess be for Torian Prince's three-point percentage?
Since Chris's comeback?
Yeah.
It hasn't been great. I'm going to go 31%.
You would be way over. 21%.
Okay, yeah.
Six of 29 on threes.
Yeah, that's not good.
And, you know, look, he's the guy that has had to make the biggest adjustment since Chris Middleton came back because Chris took his job. And Torian Prince, credit to him, said a couple of times already, but I think he said it again today after their shoot-around, I didn't come here expecting to be a starter, so this isn't like I'm totally caught off guard and have to refigure out how to play basketball and what do I do differently now? Doc Rivers was told that, and he was asked about Torian Prince before this game too and said, yeah, it's great, I love the attitude, but he's lying. Every single player thinks I'm going to be a starter on this team. But Torian Prince has had to make the biggest adjustment. I mean, we all said at one point during that stretch where Torian Prince was shooting, what did he peak at? I think he was up to 58% from threes.
Yeah, it was top in the league for
it
a
was,
good stretch.
Yeah. He's the guy that's had to adjust the most because you saw what he was doing, and I think we all realized as well, this is probably too many minutes for Torian Prince. Like, you don't want to have to rely on Torian Prince for 35 minutes a night, game in, game out. So you'd love to see that number start to come down, and it has. But it's just different because you're in the starting lineup. You're going to get really good looks when you're playing on the floor with Giannis. And not to say he's had no minutes with Giannis since Chris Middleton returned, but it's just a different volume. It's a different volume of looks. It's a different volume of minutes that you're on the floor with Giannis and with Damian Lillard that we've had to see Torian Prince, and this isn't necessarily a bad thing, but shift more into, okay, we just need you out there for perimeter defense, and we're going to lean on the rest of the guys for more shooting.
And I think that's what, you know, the part of getting the big three back together, Justin, consistently is going to play a vital role into where this team goes into the playoffs because these roles have to be, in my opinion, have to be carved out and identified, which I think they are. And this isn't something new for Torian Prince either. I mean, coming from L.A. where he was with LeBron James and Anthony Davis. So, like, he knows, I think, what his role is on this team and when he came and signed that contract to be a Milwaukee Buck. He knows, you know, what his job is going to be. But for the first, you know, what was it, 30, 45 days, it was something completely different. And not that that probably caught him off guard, obviously, with Chris Middleton having that surgery. But that's why I think, you know, I don't want to say urgency because I feel like that means like it's got to happen, you know, really quick. But I would say, you know, post All-Star break, Justin, I think All-Star break is where I think this needs to be a consistent night in, night out. And obviously you can't help with injuries and illnesses, and there's got to be luck played into this. But that's what we've seen with Andre Jackson Jr. over this last month or so, is what we've seen with Ryan Rollins and A.J. Green and Gary Trent Jr. They know what their role is. And I think when Prince has that identified and he's, you know, not playing, starting one game and then not starting the next game and then, you know, whatever, I think he'll get better and he'll get more comfortable as that goes on. And it's kind of been an unfair thing for him. And he's been fantastic, though, man. I mean, for, you know, when he, from game one, you know, up until recently, I mean, he has been huge for this Bucks team on both ends of the floor.
He's gone from about 29 minutes a game to 20 per game since Chris's return. And he's 21% on his threes since December 6th, 6 of 29 overall in 9 games, in the 21 games played before that, where Chris Middleton was unavailable. He went 45 of 81 on threes, 56%. He's gone from 56% to 21%. As I always say,
yeah, it's big.
The truth lies somewhere in the middle. Like, I don't think any of us thought Torian Prince was going to be a high 40s three-point shooter. Low 20s is certainly not acceptable, though. Like, he needs to be 37, 38, because he's going to get the looks.
That's what his career is. Yeah. He's 38%, you know, from his first career.
His volume hasn't really changed, which tells you your minutes have come down by about a third per game. So when you're out there, he's shown more and more willingness to put the ball on the floor and drive to the basket. But when you're out there, look, you said this yourself at Media Day. You looked at all the film from last year. You went to, I would assume, Second Spectrum and got with coaches for the Bucks and just looked at all the catch-and-shoot opportunities to figure out, where do I need to position myself? Where can I expect Giannis to get me the ball? Like, I'm going to thrive in catch-and-shoot. And those numbers, the fact that the volume, or at least in terms of his attempts per game, it's taken a bit of a hit, but it's stayed somewhat consistent, tells me the message is, when you're out there, just play defense and take threes. That's all we need.
Yeah.
And look, it's a shooting slump. Just like we said, Gary Trent Jr. dealt with earlier this season. Brook Lopez dealt with earlier this season. And the good piece here is his shooting slump is coming when other guys have picked it up, opposed to earlier in the year when everybody was going through a slump except for A.J. Green and Torian Prince. But that's one of the things that has stood out the most, is you think back to all of those games, especially early in that first set of 11 to 20 games for the Bucks, where you just got big moments from your bench. Point production, plays defensively, shots that were hit. Torian Prince gave you a lot of those. And that's what's been void for the past almost 10 games here. And I think that's where it really stands out, I should say. Nights like tonight, where it's not 60 points that you have to make up, but it's the most in the league, and what, 33 that are missing, so where are we going to make those points up? That's where you need your role players to remain consistent and start to hit shots, and it's unfortunate that Torian Prince is going through this slump now with Giannis off the floor. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. I want to take a look at what we've seen across the Eastern Conference, because we said pretty big opportunity here for the Bucks, and it's too early to get into the help and schedule and standings watch, but you have gotten some very favorable results around you, but unfortunately haven't taken advantage of that in the last couple of days. We'll explain after this on Bucks Talk.
This is Bucks Talk.
A jab step in. Now he drives again. Ball knocked away, but he regathers. It's down low. He picks it up. Feeds it out to Giddey. Launches from three and hits. Well, that went from disaster to delight for the Bulls in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, Josh Giddey big tonight. Kobe White big for the Bulls. Nikola Vucevic big as well. as, look, this is a Bulls team that you just got the sense they were not going to be embarrassed by the Bucks twice in a week, by the shorthanded Bucks twice in a week. I mentioned you've started to get some help here. Granted, we're, a little more than a third of the way through the season now at the 30-game mark, so it's still not the standings watch period. And Doc was asked about this before the game, too, in that Sam Smith, the longtime writer in the Chicago area, had a number of questions for Doc, and one of them was basically about, hey, your team, and again, it gets back to what we said earlier, that internally, this team is just, we've answered those questions. We're ready to move on from that discourse. But, hey, since that start, your team has done X, Y, and Z, and it seems like there's a lot of faith in this team from you and everybody on the squad. What are some of the things that you've seen? How does this compare to other teams? And is there a sense of everybody's playing for third because of what the Celtics and the Cavs are doing? And I don't know about you. I feel that way, that everybody's probably playing for third now. You're still a decent amount back of the Boston Celtics. Tonight's result certainly does not help there. You're not catching the Cavs. You don't have the tiebreaker with the Cavs. With this loss, you are now 10 games back in the loss column of the Cavaliers. You are 6 games back in the loss column of the Celtics. You don't have the tiebreaker there. So it would take a Herculean task for you to move past either of those two teams. Your best shot is to get the 3 seed. That is still entirely possible, and you almost got more help tonight. This was a winnable game. Thursday was a winnable game. The Knicks were losing, and that's right now one of the differences, that these are the games that ultimately determine your seeding. You had a chance to win this game. You had a chance to win Thursday. You did not. The Knicks were playing the Washington Wizards tonight. The lowly Washington Wizards. The Wizards had a 2-possession lead late in the game. The Knicks tied the game in the final 10 seconds on a Jalen Brunson jumper, and they ultimately won in overtime in a game where Brunson scored 55. Like, it's those swings that ultimately determine your seed line. When you look back and you say, man, we let that one get away. The Knicks aren't saying that because of performances like this. So I don't want to make too much out of one singular game, or in this case, two back-to-back games in December. But that is the reality. So you've started to see the Magic have had a rough schedule. They've gone 4-6 in their last 10. Injuries continue to pile up for that Orlando Magic team. You got 2 games coming up with the Magic in January. I would assume Paolo Banchero is going to be back. I don't know about Franz Wagner when you play those two teams, but I have to assume Paolo Banchero will be back by that point, because he only played in the first 6 games of the season with an oblique injury. And those are typically about a month. This has gone longer than a month now. But the Magic have been below 500. The Celtics have been 6-4 in their last 10 games. Like, you look up and down the Eastern Conference, there's 2 teams right now that have really been playing well of late. 3, actually. One we can't ignore. It's just easy to do so because you're not looking down far enough. The Cavs are 9-1 in their last 10 games. The Knicks are 8-2, and they're starting to get more consistency and play a lot better. The third team that I was referencing is the 76ers, who are 7-3 now in their last 10 games. But everybody else continues to leave the door open for you to do something. So that's why these next, 4-5 games that you have leading into that matchup, that's going to be highly anticipated, assuming both teams are healthy, with Victor Wembanyama and the Spurs. That's why these are important, because, look, with the Eastern Conference being what it is, the door has always been open, but somebody's pushing it even more open with what all those teams, save for the Cavs and Knicks, from 2-9 are doing right now.
I'll take it a step further too, Justin, because I think everything that you said is spot on, like it usually is. Every now and then I got to, steer you clear. But outside of Boston, Justin, and I'm looking at the Eastern Conference and the teams that you just rattled off, you're looking at Cleveland, You're looking at the New York Knicks, the Orlando Magic, the Hawks, the Heat, the Pacers, who the Bucks play in a few days. I know the Bucks have not done well in postseason play since they won the championship in 2021. And outside of Boston, Justin, there's not a single team in the Eastern Conference that I fear if I have a fully healthy, mostly healthy, big three healthy Bucks team. I just don't. And I know for the longest time I've been a big seeding guy. Oh, we got to, you know, win these games for seeding purposes. And that's important. It is. It's important. You want to play more games at home. You want to give your team a better chance. But we've had that, and we haven't been healthy. And that's where I fall in line where get me to the postseason healthy, and you can put me three through, you know, seeding from 3 to 8. I don't care. Give me a fair fight in the postseason with my fully healthy Giannis and fully healthy Damian Lillard, and give me the Chris Middleton we had last year in the postseason and the Chris Middleton that we've seen since he's come back. He was fantastic again tonight. I think that's where I'm at right now as a Bucks fan, Justin. And maybe that's wrong. Maybe I'm just, you know, being too much of a biased fan, and obviously you want to play more home games and you don't want to go on the road. But a road game, all you need is one win. This Bucks team has won games on the road. They've faced adversity since game one of this NBA season. I think they can steal a game on the road. And outside of Boston, I think they can beat any one of those teams. And that includes Cleveland. They've given Cleveland, outside of the latest matchup after the NBA Cup, they've given Cleveland, you know, a really tough fight. You know, they lost those two games by a combined 3 points, and obviously the postseason is a little bit different. But I'm content, you know, looking at these standings, where this Bucks team is, and if they can get to the postseason, knock on wood, fully healthy, outside of Boston, because Boston's the recent team. They went out and won a championship. They've proven themselves. None of these other teams have. None of them. So outside of Milwaukee as well, you know, over the last few years. So I like where the Bucks are at right now. Again, it all depends on where they're at health-wise, but that's my main concern going into the postseason this year.
I would agree that when I look at the East, I mean, it's still the Celtics that you would have to put number one as the reigning champs, and just the team that has the best mix on both ends of the floor. But they've certainly had their questions this year, and part of that is, I think, what we saw in the 21-22 season and what every defending champion goes through. Actually, let's do this. Let's take one more break, and I do want to finish with that conversation about the Eastern Conference and what you mentioned about just getting right and going from there with the teams that are right now in front of you and your likely opponents in the postseason. We'll wrap up with that on Bucks Talk.
Welcome back to Bucks Talk.
All right, Tuesday night, New Year's Eve, Tuesday afternoon, the final game of the regular season, final game of the calendar year for the Bucks in Indianapolis against the Pacers. That is another one of those teams we mentioned that has been 500-ish. They've been playing better, but you got a lot of teams in the East that have given you these stretches of, okay, they've steered it in the right direction, but it's a lot of two steps forward, one step back, and so on. And the Bucks this last week are in that category. It's not fair to say that's what the Bucks have been doing too. It's just the last three games that we're talking about that we've seen this. But I'm going to be very curious to see the energy from both teams in that matchup, because it is a Pacers team that was certainly going through it the first time the Bucks played them, and that's when the Bucks were really starting to build momentum. I don't think there is any love lost between those two teams still, dating back to last year. And look, I'm sure the Pacers would love nothing more than to close out 2024 with a win over the Bucks. Right now, Indiana's 15-17. They can start to move towards 500 and start to push the Bucks further away or close to 500. Indy plays tomorrow against the Celtics, so you're going to have more rest than the Pacers. But to your point, Brandon, as we wrap here, it's still the Celtics for me. Famous last words, I know. I don't have that fear in the New York Knicks because of the other end of the floor, which is crazy to suggest for a Tom Thibodeau team. I don't have that fear defensively. The Cavs are a very good team. I'm not going to go as far as saying I don't have a fear of the Cleveland Cavaliers. There are questions about the postseason, but Kenny Atkinson's a very good coach, and that is a group that has a lot of chemistry. And to the point that you have heard a lot of head coaches make these last 36 hours, 24 hours, given what happened yesterday to Mike Brown, the teams that stay together and don't constantly change, in the long run, those are the best teams. The Bucks were one of those teams up until last year. The Celtics have been one of those teams. The Cavaliers are one of those teams. So I do think there has to be an appropriate amount, and I'm not saying you're slighting them, but of respect for the Cavaliers. But every other team, we talked about this before, that you look at, there are questions on at least one end of the floor. So just stay healthy is the big message here as we move into 2025. Tuesday afternoon, 2 o'clock tip in Indianapolis. 1:30 is when our pregame coverage begins. And as always, be sure to stick around after the game for Bucks Talk. Brandon and I will talk to you then.